Daniel chapter 6 is where we're going to end up tonight. Years ago, when I was in high school, I loved to play football. And when playing football, I loved to play defense. And I spent several years playing middle linebacker and loved reading offenses and getting to the ball. The first year I played, I learned a valuable lesson. I remember the play well, and I was excited because practice had paid off, and I knew what the play was going to be. I knew where the ball was going to be. And I listened for the count, and I took off running toward it, and I could see the running back. I was anticipating wrapping him with the hardest tackle that I could muster, and I was salivating at the chance to get a tackle for a loss. But I forgot one thing. You see, there's this position that they sometimes call the pulling guard. And just as I was extending my arms to grab the runner, I realized that I was no longer looking the direction that I was going. I saw legs and feet above me, mine included. And then the distinct pain of being blindsided settled into my body. I saw stars, and the pulling guard got one to put on his helmet. What happened? He hit me in my blind spot. You know, a lot of people take care to watch out for blind spots. I've never been more aware of that. One of the car companies put out an advertisement. It's almost a mind puzzle when you look at it. But I've never been more reminded of that than when Drew started driving a few months ago. And we had to remember all of the basics. You know, you just get used to driving. You get used to checking your blind spots. You get used to seeing what's on the road. And then we have to remind him, hey, son, watch your blind spot. Make sure there's nobody there. We take such care to watch out for blind spots. But folks, the truth is, we all have blind spots. Parents have them. Teachers have them. Coaches have them. Workers have them. Bosses have them. And yes, even pastors have them. Blind spots do not have to hinder us. The danger of a blind spot becomes extremely high when we don't realize we have it and when those who we lead know what it is and choose to manipulate. One writer says this, all of us have weaknesses and insecurities that a clever manipulator might exploit. Sometimes we're aware of these weaknesses and how someone might use them to take advantage of us. Sometimes we're unaware of our biggest vulnerabilities. Manipulators often know us better than we know ourselves. They know what buttons to push, when and how hard. Our lack of self-knowledge sets us up to be exploited. Another writer says this, and I'm going to put the statement up on the screen for you because I want you to see it. He says, for a Christian, manipulation is using unbiblical means of controlling or influencing others. More specifically, manipulation is often an attempt to gain control of another individual or situation by inciting an emotional reaction rather than a biblical response from that individual. It often is accomplished through intimidation. This involves selfishly coercing someone to or inhibiting someone from a particular course of action by directly or indirectly causing him to sense some kind of threat. Now, I know that's a mouthful of words, but you know we are all manipulators at heart. And some of the greatest manipulators I've met, master manipulators, are the newborn babies. Have you ever noticed that? Moms know what I'm talking about. Dads don't know because they sleep through it unless they're elbowed. You know, but the crying comes in the night, you check the diaper, you fed them just recently. What does the baby want? They want to be held. What are they doing? They've learned that crying means that somebody's going to come and pick them up. And then you begin to teach them a lesson. And I've seen this one before too. They begin to realize that crying is not enough, so they learn this. You ever had one learn that? Oh, now there's a cough, and mom is coming to check. We're manipulators from birth. And manipulators can become masters of their trade. It's the child in the store who wants a toy and mom says no, and the child throws a fit and he has to be taken out of the store kicking and screaming. What is the child doing? He's creating an emotional manipulation, right? He's trying to control. How about the employee who wants the time off and the boss says there are too many employees gone, now is not a good time, and the employee pouts and gives a silent treatment. What's the employee doing? He's trying to incite fear in the boss. Did I do something wrong? Have I hurt my employee? Or the teenager who wants to do something that parents don't want him to do. And parents say, no, that is not the best activity for you to participate in. And the teenager gets angry and criticizes the parents and brings up past sin or shortcomings of his parents. What's he doing? He's inciting guilt, trying to get the parent to compromise. A manipulation is going on. It's the wife who wants a new vehicle and the husband says, not now, our budget can't handle it. And the wife gives the cold shoulder. She's inciting an emotional response. There's a manipulation going on. It's the student who may flatter the teacher and does something nice for them. And the student wants extra time for a homework assignment. And the teacher says, no, you've had a week to complete the assignment. And the student gets angry and accuses the teacher of having no heart and having it out for them. There's a manipulation going on. There's a stirring of an emotion. There's a control that's trying to be exerted. It's the friend who wants to have a guy's night out. And the husband says, no, I need to spend time with my family. And the friend begins to ask all kinds of why questions and puts him on a guilt trip for not giving time to the guys. What's going on? A manipulation. You see, manipulators often portray themselves as helpless or hurting or frightened or wounded when the truth is that they are hostile, aggressive warriors. They want control. James puts it best in chapter 4. He says, from whence come wars and fightings among you? Come they not hence, even of your lusts that war in your members? Ye lust and have not, ye kill and desire to have and cannot obtain. Ye fight and war, yet ye have not because ye ask not. Ye ask and receive not because ye ask amiss, that ye may consume it upon your lusts. We all have that manipulative side to us. Another writer says this, when people knowingly resort to manipulation in order to get something, it's because the something they want is wrong. Now follow what he says. Not because that something is necessarily sinful in and of itself, but because they want something, or that something, as good as it might be, too much. The fact that a Christian is willing to sin by manipulating someone in order to acquire what he longs for is evidence that he has made an idol of it. Strong words. A manipulator will often exploit a blind spot in one or both of these ways. Number one, there will be an attempt to play on the emotions. They go after an anger response or a sympathy response or a guilt response or a shame response or a fear or an anxiety. They'll try to incite something within you. They'll try to gain a controlling aspect of your emotion. And then the second thing is this, there will be an attempt to motivate someone to fulfill their personal desires without clearly stating them. How do you know if you've been manipulated that way? Well, you find yourself asking these questions. What do they really want? What are they really asking for? Is there an agenda that I don't know about? Is there a problem I don't know about? Have I overlooked something or someone? It's not easy when you have a manipulating heart. And it's not easy when you've been manipulated. when your blind spots have been found out and someone begins to exploit them. And that's where I want to look in Daniel chapter 6 tonight. Many times we look at this chapter and we look at the life of a godly man, Daniel, who was faithful to his duties. But in this chapter, we also find some characters that were master manipulators. And we begin to see characteristics of what these manipulators do and who they are and what the results are of their manipulation. So Daniel chapter 6, we'll begin reading in verse 1. We see in verse 1 it says, "It pleased Darius to set over the kingdom 120 princes, which should be over the whole kingdom, and over these three presidents, of whom Daniel was first, that the princes might give accounts unto them, and the king should have no damage. Then this Daniel was preferred above the presidents and the princes, because an excellent spirit was in him, and the king thought to set him over the whole realm." So we pick up in Daniel's life, and Darius the king is ruling over the kingdom of Babylon, and he decides that he's going to set up a leadership structure that keeps him from wearing himself out. He's going to delegate some duties, and he had 120 princes that he set up, and then over those, he had three that he set up, and Daniel, being a faithful man, and having a godly testimony, and one of truth, and honesty, and integrity, the king looks at him, and he says, "You know what? This man has an excellent spirit. I am going to make him chief of all of these. He's going to be second in command in the kingdom." And that was a tremendous honor for Daniel. But there were those that were there who were watching. And they didn't want Daniel to be in control. They had their own agenda. We see in verse 4, it says, "Then the presidents and the princes sought to find occasion against Daniel concerning the kingdom." I love this statement. "But they could find none occasion nor fault, for as much as he was faithful, neither was there any error or fault found in him." Then said these men, they didn't give up very easily, "We shall not find any occasion against this Daniel, except we find it against him concerning the law of his God. Then these presidents and princes assembled together to the king and said thus unto him, King Darius, live forever." We find now that these men begin to display a characteristic, and that is that they had a desire for power that produced a disregard for authority. And we have a manipulating spirit, or we have someone that we lead who has a manipulating spirit, you will find that usually the driving force in the heart of a manipulator, or one who exploits others, is that they have a desire to be in control. They have to be calling the shots. And it's amazing. It can be a 50-year-old, it can be a 2-year-old. But they will try to control. There's a desire that produces a disregard for authority. Mom and dad, that's why at 2 and 3 years old, when the child is saying no, what are they doing? They are learning to control. They are trying to manipulate, and you've got to develop their character at that age. You've got to guide them and to lead them. These men had a desire for power. They were people who answered to Daniel. And we see that their desires got in the way of following authority. What did they do in verse 4? They sought to find occasion against Daniel. They began to look. They were looking for inconsistencies. They were looking for blind spots that he may have. They were watching for some chink in the armor. Their desires were driving them. We also see this, their desires became their agenda and eventually an attempt to create their own domain. We see in verses 5 and 6, they begin to look and they could not find an occasion to blame Daniel. So what did they do? They began to look at the law concerning his God. They began to compare things back and forth. How can we get at this man? How are we going to do it? It's interesting when we look at their actions. I want you to read with me verse 6 and verse 11. We'll see an interesting word. I'll try to emphasize it as I read. Verse 6 says, then these presidents and princes assembled together to the king and said thus unto him, King Darius, live forever. Now look at verse 11. Then these men assembled and found Daniel praying and making supplication before his God. That word assembled is an interesting word. It means this. It means to go as a group or a throng, as a mob. And it's the idea of linear movement with the focus on the bustle of a crowd moving together. It implies collusion. That word implies that they were trying to do something underhanded. What were they doing? They were definitely stirring emotion. You ever seen what happens when somebody gets a burr under their saddle and they want to begin to manipulate circumstances? What do? They begin looking for Confederates, right? We should all sit down and have a discussion about this. We should give everybody all of the facts. And usually a manipulator is one who doesn't give all the facts. They just give the facts that they want everybody to hear. They begin to incite an emotional response within a crowd. And that's what these men were doing. They were assembling together, and there was high emotion going on. What are we going to do about this? This man's going to be in control. We can't let him get into control. We want our way. They were involved in a conspiracy. They were conspiring together. They had a purpose. They were united under a goal. And the second characteristic we see in this as they're beginning to carry out their actions is that they knew the king's blind spot and they manipulated it. Look at verse 6. It says, then these presidents and princes assembled together to the king and said thus unto him, King Darius, live forever. All the presidents of the kingdom, the governors and the princes, the counselors and the captains have consulted together to establish a royal statute and to make a firm decree that whosoever shall ask a petition of any god or man for 30 days, save of thee, O king, he shall be cast into the den of lions. Now, O king, establish the decree and sign the writing that it be not changed according to the law of the Medes and the Persians, which altereth not. Wherefore, King Darius signed the writing and decree. They knew the king's blind spot. What did they do? They betrayed the trust of their authority. Stop and think about it. The king trusted Daniel. He saw within him an excellent spirit. He trusted him enough that he was going to set him over all of the princes and rulers in the kingdom. And these men knew that. These men knew that the king's trust was so great that if they lied about their recommendation, the king would follow it. As they come to the king in verse 7, what do they say? What's the key word? All. Now, folks, let me ask you a question. Would Daniel have gone along with a plan such as that? No way. But what were they doing? They were manipulating a blind spot. They were going after their desire. And they betrayed the trust of their king. They were not giving all of the details about their request. Not only did they betray the trust of the king, but they appealed to the king's emotions and pride. In verse 7, what does it say? Verse 8. It says, now, O king, establish the decree and sign the writing. They said, oh, king, you're such a great king. For 30 days, nobody should make a petition of anyone, of any god, unless they come to you first. Oh, wow, can you imagine being the king? Hey, that's a great idea. Man, I can know what's going on in the kingdom. Everybody's going to come to me. They're going to see me as king like he wasn't already. And what did they do? They made an appeal to his emotion and his pride. And they did it by making obligatory statements. Another characteristic of someone who's manipulating. Oh, king, you should do this. This is what's right to do. They appealed to him. And then the third thing we find is this. They used the king's blind spot to gain control. Look at verse 10. Now when Daniel knew that the writing was signed, he went into his house, and his windows being open in his chamber toward Jerusalem, he kneeled upon his knees 3 times a day and prayed and gave thanks before his God as he did aforetime. What a testimony of this man. He knew he was being manipulated. He knew that he had been exploited. And what did he do? He just did what he had always done. He was faithful. He didn't let it bother him. Daniel understood the proverb that says, "Answer not a fool according to his folly, lest thou also be like unto him." Daniel didn't get up in arms and run to the king and say, "King, what are we going to do? This decree is keeping me from praying to my God." Daniel didn't do that. He chose not to answer the fools according to their folly. And he just went on doing what he knew was right. We find verse 11, "Then these men assembled and found Daniel praying and making supplication before his God." And remember that word assembled. They were assembled for no good. "Then they came near and spake before the king concerning the king's decree. Hast thou not signed a decree that every man that shall ask a petition of any god or man within 30 days, save of thee, O king, shall be cast into the den of lions?" Boy, doesn't that sound like asking a question without putting all the details in it? A desire to have an outcome that you're not sharing all of the details of that outcome? "King, didn't you say this?" The king answered and said, "This thing is true, according to the law of the Medes and the Persians, which altereth not." Then they answered and said before the king, "That Daniel, which is of the children of the captivity of Judah, regardeth not thee, O king, nor the decree that thou hast signed, but maketh his petition 3 times a day. They had gained control. The king had lost his authority. He'd been manipulated. The trap was sprung, and he found himself in a place where he had given his authority up. Now we see the wheels begin to turn, the tide begins to turn, and we begin to see the results of this manipulating of blind spots. And we see that the king realized that he'd been manipulated. Look at verse 14. "Then the king, when he heard these words, was sore displeased with himself, and set his heart on Daniel to deliver him. And he labored till the going down of the sun to deliver him." What had happened? The manipulators got his emotions. Who was he displeased with? Himself. Isn't that just like any leader who's gotten blindsided? Usually, they begin to internalize and they look at themselves and say, "How could this have happened? How could I let this happen?" But friends, the king doesn't stay that way. And those of us that choose to manipulate, it doesn't stay that way. People wise up. They begin to get smart. And although the king was in an emotional state, he was kicking himself. He was trying to figure out what he could do to help Daniel. We need to remember this lesson. The king learned of his blind spot in a way that jeopardized the relationship with the ones exploiting it. Look at verse 15. "Then these men," notice this, "assembled unto the king and said unto the king, Know, O king, that the law of the Medes and Persians is that no decree nor statute which the king establisheth may be changed." Their pride had begun to swell up in them. They knew they had control, and the king now is beginning to get it. And these guys don't realize that their relationship is jeopardized. They don't see what's coming. Listen, folks, when we manipulate, when we exploit, when we go after the blind spots of those around us, there is always someone who is going to be smarter and better at it. There's always someone who's going to figure it out. And he was displeased with himself, and he couldn't undo what he was enticed to do. But these men were going to suffer an ill fate. Not only did the king learn of his blind spot, but the king found himself in a place where he was forced to consider compromising his ethics and or character. Look at verse 16. It says, "Then the king commanded, and they brought Daniel and cast him into the den of lions. Now the king spake and said unto Daniel, Thy God, whom thou servest continually, he will deliver thee. And a stone was brought and laid upon the mouth of the den, and the king sealed it with his own signet, with the signet of his lords, that the purpose might not be changed concerning Daniel. Then the king went to his palace and passed the night fasting. Neither were instruments of music brought before him, and his sleep went from him. Then the king arose very early in the morning and went in haste into the den of lions. And when he came to the den, he cried with a lamentable voice unto Daniel. And the king spake and said to Daniel, O Daniel, servant of the living God, is thy God, whom thou servest continually, able to deliver thee from the lions? Then said Daniel unto the king, O king, live forever. My God hath sent his angel and hath shut the lions' mouths that they have not hurt me, for as much as before him innocency was found in me, and also before thee, O king, have I done no hurt. Then was the king exceedingly glad for him and commanded that they should take Daniel up out of the den. So Daniel was taken up out of the den, and no manner of hurt was found upon him because he believed in his God." We find this king in a very peculiar place. And sometimes we as leaders or parents find ourselves in a peculiar place when we've been manipulated. Our children put us in a place where we are forced to consider our ethics and our character. Am I going to give ground? Should I just give in? And here's the man who could have in some way given in some way tried to make an exception. And he had to consider, am I going to live by the law that rules this land? Or am I going to give up on my ethics and my character? God help us if we manipulate, if we force a leader or someone we know or love into a place like that, that they would even consider that. The king goes to see Daniel, and Daniel has been preserved by his God. And now, the tides really begin to turn. Look at verse 24. And the king commanded, and they brought those men which had accused Daniel, and they cast them into the den of lions, them, their children, and their wives, and the lions had the mastery of them, and brake all their bones in pieces, or ever they came at the bottom of the den. You see, a master manipulator could meet a similar fate planned for their authority when exploiting them. And these men have manipulated and controlled, and when the king found that the law was fulfilled, what did he do? He gave them the fate that Daniel suffered. What do we learn about this? We learn that it doesn't pay to take the place of God. We learn that it doesn't pay to take the place of authority in our lives. And when we do, our God is watching. And our God will watch out for those in authority, although they may have to suffer through getting blindsided. God eventually gives wisdom. And folks, the wheels of God's judgment and chastisement may turn slow, but they turn exceedingly fine. I mentioned Proverbs chapter 26 and verse 4, answer not a fool according to his folly, lest thou be like him. But you know what's interesting? In the next verse, we have answer a fool according to his folly, that he be not wise in his own eyes. You see, when we're dealing with someone who manipulates us, we have to determine how we're going to answer them. We can do it in a way where we violate Proverbs 26:4. What happens? We're drawn into a conflict by the person manipulating, or they're allowed to effectively employ sinful behaviors against us. Or we react with a snappy comeback. And sometimes parents, we need to be careful, and leaders, we need to be careful about that. We can be just as sarcastic in our response and just as unkind and even just as manipulative and controlling in our response as those that are trying to control us. What begins to happen? We resort to defending ourselves and justifying our actions and blame shifting. We walk away feeling guilty and intimidated and frustrated and exasperated like a failure. And the manipulator walks away with the satisfaction of knowing that he has punished or manipulated his victim. But what happens when we answer in a way that a fool is answered according to his folly, or in a way that he deserves to be answered so that he is not wise in his own foolishness? What happens? We begin to gain control of the conversation. We need to have our antenna up. The manipulator is confronted biblically. And that's important. We respond out of love and a well-thought-out biblical answer that aims at exposing their folly. We identify and effectively put an end to the manipulative behavior. We walk away confident that the person that's trying to manipulate, by God's grace, has been silenced in their folly. And the manipulator walks away unsuccessful at his attempted manipulation and possibly realizing that he has played the fool. We need to be careful about our responses. Is it right to answer a fool according to his folly? Yes, if we do it the right way. Let me give you two things and we'll be done. This could be a long time series. But two things. And I want you to think about this. We won't even turn to the passage. But Jesus gave the perfect response to being manipulated and exploited. You remember the story when he goes into Bethany and he sits down and begins to teach in the home of Mary and Martha and Lazarus. And there is Mary sitting at the feet of Jesus. And what is Martha doing? She's cumbered about in the kitchen. She's making the meal and she's working and she's looking out there and she's just getting angry because Mary's sitting out there at Jesus' feet and she should be in the kitchen helping her and nothing's going to get done and Jesus isn't going to have his meal on time and all of these things, and her emotions are stirring. And she comes to the Lord and she says, "Lord, carest thou not?" What's she doing? She's inciting an emotional response. What's she trying to do? She's trying to get the Lord stirred up. "Oh, Martha, I'm so sorry. I didn't realize that Mary was such an integral part of the kitchen." And she was trying to get an emotional response. Well, how did Jesus answer her? The first thing he did is he made an appeal to her personal responsibilities. And folks, it's the best way to begin our response to someone who's manipulating or exploiting us. Make an appeal to their personal responsibilities. What did he say? "Martha, Martha, you're worried. You're bothered about so many things. But only one thing is necessary." Where did he go? He went back to that thing that was necessary. He went back to her personal responsibility. You see, Martha was not fulfilling at least two biblical responsibilities. And he reproved her and he reminded her that she shouldn't worry and she shouldn't be troubled. And then the second response that he gave was this. He made a subtle yet definite appeal to God's will. So Martha, what's your real responsibility here? Are you really fulfilling your responsibilities? Are you really doing what you should be doing? Martha, you're troubled. You're worried. You're in an emotional tizzy over this. He said, Martha, there's only one thing that's necessary. Mary has chosen the good thing. It's that thing that won't be taken away. She's sitting at the feet of her Lord and gaining necessary fellowship and learning that she needs. You see, it was Jesus that said, man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceedeth out of the mouth of God. Mary was doing what was necessary. And the Lord brought the attention of Martha to what God's will was. Folks, when we have a manipulator in our life, as we begin to deal with them, you know what? It's easy for us to respond quickly, but you know, the best thing may be to take a step back and say, how should I answer this? Do I answer it with a sarcastic comment? Or am I going to make an appeal to personal responsibility? What's the one needful thing here? Do I answer it with an appeal to God's will? As we begin to do that, we'll find not only that being manipulated will begin to wane in our lives and our leadership, but those that are around us that are manipulating us, they'll begin to learn. And we'll have an influence in their life. And now, the fool that is answered according to their folly won't be wise in their own eyes, but they'll begin to realize that they played the fool. They'll begin to make changes. And God help us. As parents, we have to teach our children. As leaders, we have to watch out. As family members, probably many of us have family members that would like to play on our emotion and get us and drive us in a particular way. Or maybe we can even look at our own lives and say, you know, I can see some things in my life. Listen, folks, none of us are above it. We all have that flesh. We all tend to control. We all tend to want our hands into everything. May God help us to see these characteristics tonight. Compare them to our lives and use them as we love others, as we help our children, as we love them, as we help those that we lead and we love them to be conformed to the image of Christ.